What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
Listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, happy Sunday. How's it going? Welcome back to another live episode of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast with me, your host, Harry Simeon, as always. And on this episode, we're going to look back on another Arsenal victory, another dominant display. Mikel Arteta's side went somewhere where, let's be honest, it's very difficult to win. Brighton had only lost one Premier League game at home this season going into that game yesterday. But Arsenal, in the end, made light work of them and returned to the summit of the Premier League. Now, it might be just for now. Liverpool travel to Manchester United a little bit later on today. I'm just going to put it out there. I've got zero faith in this Manchester United side taking anything off of Liverpool. So I'm managing my expectations already and sort of looking through the fixtures. It's that period where Liverpool, I think, have four or five away games on the bounce that I'm hoping they're going to drop some points. So for now, we need to stay in it. We also need to be wary of Manchester City, who picked up another win yesterday as well. And yeah, look, we just got to take it one week at a time. All we can do and all we can control is our performances and the outcomes of our games. And if we do that and we do it well, then nobody will be having too much to moan about, regardless of how the rest of the season pans out. We've got loads and loads and loads to get into today. We're going to discuss Mikel Arteta's changes ahead of the game. We're going to talk about some of the chances that we created in the first half. We're going to discuss the penalty, because being in the press box yesterday, there were a lot of people of a Brighton and Hove Albion persuasion that were very, very unhappy with that award. But we're going to get into why that was a stonewall penalty. We're going to talk about Arsenal's defensive solidarity. Kai Havertz again, of course. We're going to talk about Leandro Trossard. I think there's one particular thing that he is the best in this squad at, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. We'll also run you through some stats and take some of your questions from the live chat. I'll also tell you about something from an Arsenal point of view that I didn't like yesterday, which we'll get into in a little bit more detail. But before we do all that, let's say some hellos to those of you in the chat. Big hello to Mohammed, who joins us. We've got Money Ain't as well. We've got Mike Carpenter, who says, Harry, late again. I was born late, mate. It's just how it goes. We've got Scott, who says, evening, Harry. Finally get to catch a live stream. Tuning in from Melbourne. Great to see you, my friend. The Masked Cannon is with us as well. Adam Welch says, this is why he ain't getting away tickets to Munich. That's nothing to do with my timekeeping, I can assure you. Bobak says, hi, Harry. Although I miss seeing our Gunners live, it's been way too long. I will not be disappointed if they don't win this year. This has probably been the best 2 years, and I love our boys. I think everybody feels that now, don't they? Like, obviously, we're all desperate to see Arsenal go on and win either the Premier League or the Champions League or both in an ideal scenario. But I think the fact that we're looking at this team and we're talking about them being relentless, being consistent, being strong defensively, being super committed, all of that stuff, it kind of makes you feel warm and fuzzy inside. And like, I'm not saying that you don't want to win and that you're going to be happy if we don't win, but you kind of look at it and you think, well, they're doing everything within their power now. Can you go back and look at other moments in the season and say, well, if we had done better there, we might be in a stronger position now and we wouldn't be stressing about what Liverpool or City are doing, etc., etc.? Maybe, but you can't go back and change the past. All I know is that since the turn of the year, this Arsenal side have been in incredible form, both defensively and offensively. And we're going to bring you some statistics a little bit later on to highlight that we're getting it right at both ends of the pitch at the moment. And, you know, this is a team that is really likable and lovable, and I'm all in on it. So, yeah, I'm not saying I'd be happy, and I'm not trying to put forward a kind of loser's mentality. Of course, while you're in it, you got to be doing your utmost and everything within your power to try and win. But I also look at it and I think, man, the future's bright at this football club. It really, really is. We've got Daniel joining us. We've got Damien, who says, still think we've finished third, Harry. My prediction hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. Delisu says, what a good Sunday it is. Harry Steve says, good morning, everybody. Joe is with us. Jid is with us too. We've got Wes Bird here. Mr. T, D. Evagoru is with us, says, hi, Harry. Hope you and the family are well, one game at a time. Everybody's good, thank you. And yeah, one game at a time, it is indeed. Thank you so, so much. Scott says, smash the like so Harry doesn't need to beg. I like that. I like that. Wes Bird says, brilliant result yesterday, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I'll be a Man United supporter today. Oh, man. It's a weird feeling, isn't it? Kustrum says, Harry, that performance yesterday was outstanding and not the first one where they've shown that they're ready defensively to take us to a UCL final. Don't, man. Don't. What else have we got? Tom Gardner says, hi, Harry, feeling physically sick. Watching the run-in, but love this team so much. Yeah, me too. Me too. Okay, let's get into the subjects that we're going to discuss and that we're going to break down on this edition of the Chronicles of a Gooner podcast. Let's start off by talking about the changes that Mikel Arteta made. Of course, he made four changes that freshened things up and brought some players back into the team that I think we all expected to play a part yesterday. Brighton made five changes. And I remember saying to you guys in the preview show that it's very, very difficult to predict the Roberto De Zerbi lineup because he does change it so frequently. And I talked to you guys about the kind of process when you're reporting on a game of trying to figure out how many changes the team has made. Like the Arsenal team, I looked at it straight away and I went, one, two, three, four, four changes, bang, no problem. The Brighton team, I'm having to go through the list of players that played in their midweek game against Brentford and I'm crossing him off and I'm ticking him off and I'm saying he played, he didn't. And it becomes a bit of a mess. We got there in the end. Arsenal's four changes saw Jorginho, Rice, Saka and Jesus return to the starting 11. Obviously, the big news there was that Bukayo Saka was back. Now, we talked a lot about his absence against Luton and we said that it was something that we think the club took a gamble on, i.e. leaving him out that night in order to ensure that he was fit for the weekend. And we saw Arsenal move to take him off just after the hour mark once we got the second goal last night or yesterday evening in order to make sure that he's got a bit more gas in the tank ahead of the game against Bayern Munich. So I think Arsenal are managing him quite well at the moment. Martinelli was the one that replaced him. We also made five changes in the game as well. When you're winning a game, as comfortably as we were, then you can do that, can't you? We took off Zinchenko, who I don't expect, by the way, to start against Bayern Munich. Tomiyasu came on, got another 20 minutes or so under his belt. I think it'll be he or Kivior starting against Bayern on Tuesday night. Leandro Trossard came on to replace Gabriel Jesus. He got around about half an hour. Leandro Trossard obviously got that goal as well, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. The Nketiah and Vieira changes came really late on in the game, 89 minutes. They didn't really have much chance to impact it. And the rest that was given to Odegaard or Kai Havertz as a result of those changes is minimal. It's not going to make much difference, is it, if we're being honest. But the team was a good team. It was a strong team. I thought that Mikel might go with Partey and Rice in the midfield. He didn't, though. He went for Jorginho, brought Jorginho back into the side. I wonder if that's him saving Thomas Partey for Bayern in midweek. We're going to have to wait and see. Havertz continues up front. And he has to, because he's just been in such irresistible form. And we'll come on to him in a bit. Jesus played from the left, which suggests to me that Martinelli's being saved for Bayern, maybe. I don't know. Jesus from the left, it doesn't work as well as Jesus from the right for me. But of course, it was his brilliant footwork that won Arsenal the penalty kick after we'd missed a host of chances. I have to say, watching that first half unfold, I was a little bit concerned and I was a little bit worried because we just created chance after chance after chance, and we weren't taking them. You know, there was the header for Gabriel really early on in the game where the ball was whipped in across the face of the goal. And the goalkeeper, Verbruggen, sort of half came, didn't get there. And Gabriel, I think, actually got too much on the ball and ended up putting it wide of the near post. Then you had the ball from Ben White that played Bukayo Saka in, and he checks back onto that left foot and you're expecting the net to bulge and he puts it wide. Then there was the cutback from Saka to Jesus arriving on the edge of the box, forced a really good save out of Verbruggen, who tipped it around the post at full stretch, diving, of course, to his left-hand side. There was also that cross that came into the box, I think it was from a corner, where Gabriel wriggled free at the far post and he sort of sliced the volley wide. He was appealing for a penalty. I didn't think there was enough in it. But then, of course, Arsenal managed to find the breakthrough, and it came after Gabriel Jesus won a penalty just after the half-hour mark. Now, I do want to talk about this penalty because I feel like there's been some discussion around it that probably isn't really warranted. I watched it in real time and I thought, Stonewall penalty. No doubt about it. Jesus has got the ball on that left-hand side. He's tried to make his way into the box. Quick shuffle of the feet and he flicks it over the top of Lamptey, who comes sliding in and catches him. No doubt about it in my mind. Penalty kick. Instantly, that was my feeling from inside the stadium. Then we saw the replays on the screens in front of us in the press box. And there were a lot of people going, hold on a minute. Tarik Lamptey got a touch on the ball. That doesn't mean that it's not a foul, the fact that Tarik Lamptey got a touch on the ball. So let me break it down for you. When Gabriel Jesus checks inside, Tarik Lamptey launches himself into a silly challenge, in my opinion, and takes a huge, huge risk. And as Jesus goes to lift the ball over Lamptey's challenge, Lamptey's boot does skim the side of the ball. But does the ball deviate? Does the ball change direction? Does the ball go anywhere else? No, it doesn't. It continues on the same path, which means that if Lamptey then doesn't wipe Gabriel Jesus out, he is getting to the other side of that and he's in the box and he's all alone and he can either tee someone up or he can put the ball in the back of the net himself. So it's a foul. You know, when you make contact with a player, it's not always a foul. When you make contact with the ball, it doesn't always mean that it's not a foul. We've seen people go in and win balls, get touches on the ball first, but do it in a reckless way and be penalised and in some cases even sent off. Now, I'm not suggesting for a second that Tarik Lamptey should have been sent off or that there should have been any harsher punishment than that. But it's a wild, senseless challenge just inside the box on a player who's done you with his quick feet and is getting away from you. So there's no doubt in my mind that that's a penalty kick. And people seem to be clinging on to the fact that Lamptey's boot skims or brushes the outside of the ball. But the ball doesn't deviate. The ball doesn't change in its direction of travel. So you're not actually influencing anything by skimming the ball like that. What you've done is taken out a player who's just skipped by you because he's outthought you and he's got the quick feet that we all know Gabriel Jesus has to make that moment happen. So it's definitely a penalty for me and there's no debate about that. Let's see what you guys are saying in the live chat. I can see from some of your comments that clearly on TalkSport, they didn't feel it was or someone on TalkSport didn't feel it was. Yeah, look, I prefer not to speak is what I'll say to that. Dalisu says, I don't think that penalty was controversial at all. It was Stonewall. Steve says it was Stonewall. HE says they can cry all they want. It's a foul. Skywalker says, even De Zerbi said it was a penalty. See, I haven't even seen De Zerbi's comments, but you know, if he did, then that says it all, doesn't it? James says, rivals have different energy. When Arsenal are involved, we move. Money Ain't says, his foot barely touched the ball. And the fact that the ball didn't change direction at all makes it a clear penalty. And I completely agree with that. So any debate around that? No, not for me. As I keep saying, you can cling on to the fact that he skims the side of the ball. But given the ball doesn't deviate, given Jesus is past him and he slides in and completely wipes him out, I think you've got to point to the spot. I think the referee was right to do that in real time. And I think the VAR was right to look at that and think, well, that's not worthy of overturning. So yeah, good refereeing all round. And you know what? I have to say, I thought the referee yesterday was very, very good. I think it was John Brooks. I thought it was really good. I thought the referee at Manchester City, Anthony Taylor, was really good as well. Now, I don't normally sit here and praise referees, but when they do a good job, I will, because I'm fair. You know, I'm not one of these people that criticize officials for the sake of it. I criticize them when I feel they need criticism because the standards are not where they should be. But when they're good, when they do their jobs right, let's give them their flowers. And I'll do that for the referee yesterday. And of course, for Anthony Taylor, who I thought was really, really good at Manchester City. So now that the penalty debate's gone, we can move on to something a little bit more interesting. I do want to talk about Arsenal's defensive solidarity, because everybody's focusing on the fact that we made a lot of chances in the first half, that that Bukayo Saka converted from the spot, that Kai Havertz added a second, and that Leandro Trossard raced away to put away a third in a brilliant and really sort of beautiful way. But the truth is, that game was won based on the fact that we've just got this incredibly solid foundation from which we play. I think you never really feel at the minute that this Arsenal team are going to give up too many chances. You never really feel like we're going to go through those periods where we're up against the ropes. There will be periods where the opposition has possession, but how much of that possession actually converts into goal-scoring opportunities, and how often is David Raya actually called into action? I can remember David Raya making one good save yesterday where I think Julio and Ciso cut in from the right-hand side and sort of bent one towards the top corner. And David Raya watched it all the way, done brilliantly, timed his jump really well and managed to tip it over the top of the bar. Brighton got a corner from it, but nothing came of it. I think that's what this period, short period of success, which might not amount to anything. I hope it does, but you know, let's not get carried away. But I think what this short period of success in 2024 is based on is that defensive solidarity more than what we're offering in the final third. Now, we've been brilliant at both ends of the pitch, and I'm not trying to take anything away from the attackers, but we just seem to have this ability now to know how to make sure that we plug all the right holes, fill all the right spaces, also be quite aggressive in our press when we want to. There were times in that game when Danny Welbeck was on the pitch where I'd see either Saliba or Gabriel literally follow him into midfield as he dropped deep in a desperate attempt to try and get on the ball. But we always knew how to plug those spaces and fill those holes. You know, we always knew when that was happening and how to make sure that we protected against any vulnerability that may come from your centre half drifting into a different area of the pitch. We also weren't as, like, we didn't sit off yesterday in terms of our, like, where our line was positioned. At times, we dropped that little bit deeper when we thought that was the right thing to do. But it's the variety in our defensive play that has put us in such a strong position right now. And we're going to, as I say, a little bit later on, we're going to highlight some statistics that really do kind of, you know, bring this point home with regards to how well we're managing games defensively. But the unit just looks so good. And it's the unit for me of Gabriel, Saliba and White. And whoever is at left back, I think, has become a little bit interchangeable, depending on what you want in that particular game. What you've got is three really good defenders in White, Saliba and Gabriel, three giants, three men who are just so focused all of the time, who never shy away from a physical battle, but can play a bit as well, can get across the ground nice and quickly. You know, all the praise has been going to Saliba over the last year or so. I keep making this point, so I think it's really important. Big Gabby is just as important, if not more this season, in my opinion. I think he's been, you know, outstanding. I really, really do. But yeah, you know, talk about the attacking play, fine and great. But for me, it's about the defensive solidarity that this team is showing at the minute. And that's where we really, really do look better than all the others in the title race. We look better at the moment, but that doesn't mean that we're going to go on and win the Premier League. So, you know, it's all well and good saying Arsenal are this in the league now and they concede the fewest goals and they concede the fewest opportunities and all of that. But you got to get 3 points on the board. And another really pleasing thing was that not only did we keep the clean sheet, but we added 3 to our goal difference. So Manchester City played Crystal Palace and we made a bigger contribution to our goal difference than they did. They won 4-2. We won 3-0. So we've added plus three. They've added plus two. And these things could be key. When you're talking about a title race that is this damn tight, where you're talking about a handful of points separating all three sides in the race, goal difference could prove massive in the end. So it wasn't just a good, you know, a good result in terms of the points that we got on the board. It was a good result in terms of it was another clean sheet, and you know we added to that goal difference as well, which was great. I want to talk a little bit about the second goal. I don't think there's much to get into on the first goal. We've been through the penalty decision, and Bukayo Saka stepped up and expertly dispatched. But I do want to talk a little bit about that second goal because I thought it was really refreshing to see Jorginho getting to a very different area of the pitch and to see Kai Havertz coming alive again inside the penalty area was great too. We'll get into that right after this. Don't go anywhere. So let's focus on that second goal. The build-up to it was really good. I loved it. I loved the way that White was involved. I loved the way that the ball came inside to Odegaard. And I love the way that Jorginho, from a deep midfield position where he normally sort of operates, obviously he's a bit higher up the pitch in this particular instance and in this move, but I love the way that he spots the space and he doesn't hesitate. The confidence that he has in his teammates to plug the hole that he's about to vacate is the key to him being able to and feeling confident in making this run. He gets his head down, he sees the space and he says, do you know what? I'm going to take the gamble. I'm going to go. And Martin Odegaard plays him in towards the byline. Now, a lot of players, when they get into this position, particularly if you're somebody like Jorginho, who isn't exactly blessed with incredible pace, a lot of players would first time, without really looking, without taking time to process what's going on, without taking time to almost photograph in their mind the situation in the box and then make the right decision, would just snatch at that and would just ping it across the six-yard box and hope that somebody in Arsenal colours gets on the end of it. Not Jorginho. He's way too composed and everything he does is way too calculated for him to fall into that trap. So what does Jorginho do? He takes a touch that I don't think people expected him to take. But in taking that touch, he just buys Kai Havertz that little bit of time, if you watch it back again, to sort of shape as if he's coming short and then sort of create that half a yard of space and get himself in between the defenders. The weight on the delivery is perfect. The direction on the delivery is perfect. And all Kai Havertz has to do when it comes across to him is just open up his boot and guide it on target. That's what he does. It beats Verbruggen and Arsenal are two goals to the good. And when that ball hits the back of the net, you just know that that's the game won. And that, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, is a testament to the defensive solidarity of this team because you don't feel like it's one of those where, yeah, well, you know, we're 2-0 up, but if they get one back, this could be a nervy end to the game. You just never got that feeling. To see Jorginho overlapping on the right wing and getting to the byline before picking someone out in the middle is just, for me, the definition of total football. It's incredible to see. And it just shows you the confidence that every single one of these Arsenal players has at the minute. Because as I said, Jorginho, in a different situation, under different circumstances, where maybe he's a little bit concerned, a little bit nervous, maybe about the fact that people keep talking about how he can't get across the ground as well as others, he wouldn't take that gamble and make that run in a side that he wasn't totally confident in with regards to their ability to fill those spaces, sense the danger that may come about because he's vacated his usual position and plug that. That's where being such a cohesive and organized unit really, really does pay off. I thought the second goal was sensational. I do want to talk about the third goal too. For me personally, Leandro Trossard is the best finisher at Arsenal Football Club. There's not another player in this Arsenal squad that I would want racing through on goal in a one-on-one situation. I'm always so, so confident when he's in those positions because he seems to have the technical ability to execute whatever wacky thing he comes up with in his mind, but he also has the composure and the calmness in those situations. And it's brilliant to see. It's weird because Trossard, the substitute, always feels so much more effective than Trossard, the starter. And I can't really put my finger on why that is, but when he raced through, I knew he was going to score. And he like sort of checks a little bit and, you know, makes it a little bit difficult for the defender who's trying to get back and for the goalkeeper to kind of read his intentions. But then just when you think he's going to check back completely, he kind of half does it and then dinks it over the goalkeeper to add Arsenal's third against his former club. Coming back to haunt Brighton, of course, he fell out famously, didn't he, with Roberto De Zerbi. So to produce that moment and to celebrate it at the Amex, I'm sure was pretty satisfying for him. But I really do believe that Leandro Trossard is the best finisher at Arsenal. In fact, I'm convinced of it. I am convinced of it. Let's have a look at what you guys are saying in the live chat. Jacob says, nope, he prefers Martinelli through in a one-on-one situation. I would still back Leandro Trossard over him, I got to say. Sko says, Havertz was great again. I thought he could have had another couple of assists earlier in the game if people had finished as well. The guy is such a team player. There was a comment earlier from... who was it? One second. Let me just find it. Mighty Balls, who says, I owe you and Havertz an apology, Harry. Over the last 2 months, he's proving me to be completely wrong. Well played to him. Look, at the time when we were talking about Kai Havertz a lot and we were debating whether or not, you know, it was a good sign-in and all of that, I don't think I ever sat here and went, he's playing out of this world and everybody needs to get off his back. I was trying to highlight what I think it is, or what I thought it was at the time, that Mikel Arteta was seeing in his performances that led to him picking him week in, week out, not just in midfield, but in attack as well. Mikel Arteta said something after the game yesterday along the lines of, you know, sometimes someone plays in a position and it just clicks, and so you have to keep them playing there. And I think that's what's happened with Kai Havertz. You know, when I asked Arteta the other day about whether or not his opinions or not Havertz with regards to what his best position is had changed, he denied that. He said, I knew I was getting a very versatile player. And he talked about him playing in the wide areas as well. Now, that took me back a little bit. Like, it caught me a little bit off guard. Havertz is a winger. But when you watch him in game, he does drift into those positions quite a lot. The difference, the big difference for me between Kai Havertz, the centre forward, and Gabriel Jesus, the centre forward, is that Kai Havertz does all the link-up stuff. All the build-up play is there. He drifts right, he drifts left, he drops into midfield when he needs to. But he also has the ability to get himself into the box when we do work it wide and finish off chances that are being created by our wide players. One of my biggest criticisms of Jesus as a centre forward is that he does all the build-up stuff fantastically well. But how often is he the guy that gets on the end of the cutback or gets on the end of the drag back? He's never there. And that's the difference. Kai Havertz seems to be able to do both sides at the moment. I still don't even think, by the way, that Kai Havertz is a lethal finisher or anything like that. But he's getting into those positions often enough while still offering us all the other stuff around the edge of the box and even deeper. So that, for me, is why this centre-forward thing with Kai Havertz for Arsenal right now is working really, really well. Delisu says, it looks like Havertz starts ahead of Jesus up front at the moment, Harry. And thank you to Delisu, who's been a member of the channel for 36 months. Wow, appreciate that, mate. Really, really do. I think it's fair to say he is right now our number one striker. And he should be. He should continue to play in that position because at the moment he's doing it fantastically well. We've talked about the solidarity at the back. We've talked about how well we're playing as a sort of attacking outfit as well. We talked about the changes. I feel like because we're on such a good run at the moment, I don't want to keep going over the same ground. You know, all of the same applies as, you know, when we're talking about the defense, as we were talking about when we went to City and got a draw. And a lot of the attacking stuff, you know, Havertz this, Havertz that, Trossard this, Trossard that is, you know, we've been saying it for a long time. And I don't feel like we need to keep repeating it, but it's important that we highlight it because this is something that is completely different to the narrative that some people were trying to peddle earlier on in the season with regards to Kai Havertz. Leandro Trossard as well, by the way, just while we're on the subject of him, before I forget this stat and it goes out of my head, he's got 12 goals now this season. 12 goals for a player that rarely starts, I think is a really impressive return. and his value should not be underestimated. But as I keep saying, I do prefer Trossard the sub.
Starter.
And I can't put my finger on why that is. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I felt like my connection just went a little bit funny. Bear with me a second. Let me just fix this. There we go. Okay. I think we're back. I think we're good. Right. Short pause. And then I'm going to run you through some stats and take some of your questions. Let me know if the audio is all okay as well for those of you watching in the live chat, because my headphones are being a bit funny now ever since that little power surge, whatever the hell it was. Back in just a mo. Okay, let's run you through some of those impressive statistics that have been doing the rounds over the last, 12 hours or so. Starting with this one from Opta. Arsenal haven't trailed for a single minute in any of their 11 Premier League games in 2024. That is their longest run of games without falling behind since February to May in 2005. According to Albinio, Arsenal have kept five consecutive clean sheets on the road in the Premier League for the first time since April 1997. Opta say that Arsenal's goal difference currently of plus 51 in the Premier League is their highest in the competition since the final day of the 2004-2005 season. Against Brighton, David Raya had to make the most saves he's had to make in the Premier League for 67 days, two. And in 2024, Arsenal have scored seven more goals in the league than any other side, conceded six fewer than any other side, and have two more clean sheets than any other side. All of those metrics are great. But when everybody's played the same games, we're probably not going to be top come the end of today. And that is a frustration. And Mikel Arteta, I think, hit the nail on the head. He said, 10 wins and one draw in your last 11, and you're not even top of the league probably when everybody's played. That shows you the level and the standard that we're having to hit in order to just be in this race. So while we can get frustrated about how the table looks and we can get frustrated about, you know, what may or may not happen between now and the end of the season, the fact that this team is performing at a really high level is something that we should all be really, really proud of and something that we should be enjoying. Okay, going to take a few of your questions before I disappear. Promise the family I'll take them out for a cheeky little brunch. And then I want to watch WrestleMania from last night. Does anyone know where I can watch WrestleMania? Like, do I have to go on to TNT Sports box office here in the UK and buy it to watch last night's one? Can I buy both last night's and tonight? I don't know. I haven't watched wrestling for years, but all the sort of trailers and stuff for this this WrestleMania have got me interested. If anybody knows where I can watch it or how I can watch it back from last night, please let me know. And no spoilers, because I haven't seen anything and I've deliberately avoided Twitter not to fall into that trap. Short pause and we'll take your questions. Don't go anywhere. Okay, Joe says he's going to watch the WWE live in 2 weeks. Amazing. I've got a mate that's at WrestleMania and I'm so jealous. Zed Tom says he's heard that Douglas Luiz picked up a yellow card yesterday and will now miss the Arsenal game. That could be key for the midfield battle next weekend. That is correct. Maybe he just didn't fancy it. Maybe didn't fancy playing against us. Maybe he still wants to join us and as a result of that doesn't want to upset us by denting our title hopes. Who knows? Wesbird says, great stats, but it means nothing until we get to the last game. And fingers crossed, we are lifting the Premier League title. Absolutely. Before I dive into the questions, I did say, didn't I, that I was going to tell you guys about something that I didn't like and from an Arsenal perspective. And I do want to do that. I do want to get into that because I feel like... I feel like, you know, you can talk about the positives all you like, but sometimes you have to be open and honest about the things that were negative as well. And listen, I absolutely love this player and I think he's a massive part of that defensive solidarity that I keep talking about. But that whole incident with, I think it was Estupiñán and Ben White, where Estupiñán obviously does make a little movement towards Ben White, but Ben White decides to drop down to the ground holding his... holding sort of the underneath of his face as if he's been chinned. I didn't like that. I got to say, I didn't like that. I know Ben White is a really big and good shithouse. But it just, to me, it was just completely unnecessary yesterday. And I don't like that. And I think that if you do too much of that stuff, if you do cross into that kind of realm of, you know, being a shithouse, even when you don't need to be, and trying to gain advantages that way in games that you've already won and you're already on course to win, I think what you end up doing is putting yourself in a position where people are going to start taking decisions against you just because of a reputation. So, look, it ain't the biggest deal in the world, but if there was one thing I didn't like about Arsenal's performance yesterday, that was it. I thought it was completely unnecessary. Dark arts is what some people are calling it in the chat. Yeah, I just think there's a time and a place for it. And I think there are games in which you need it. And I think there are games where you don't. And I think if you are seen to be doing it in the games that you don't, you will end up with referees having a kind of unconscious bias towards you. Right, let's go over to X and take some questions. If you've got some in the chat, I'll pick those up as well. What else have we got? Tuthuko said, did Mikel ask his players to conserve energy at 2-0 up? I don't think he would have put that instruction across at the time at that point, but the fact that he did take off Saka and Jesus and replace them with Martinelli and Trossard at that point suggested that he was trying to either protect those players or give the others some minutes that would put them in a better position to be of use against Bayern, you know, on Tuesday night. I think there was an element of managing the game, but I don't think it would have been an instruction as simple as Mikel Arteta saying, guys, you're 2-0 up, conserve energy. I don't think that's in his nature. He's always so intense. And I was watching him on the sidelines yesterday, you know, really kind of driving the team forward and saying, go, 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 even when we were 3 goals to the good. So, yeah, no, I don't think that was a deliberate instruction. But I think naturally, when you're winning a game and you're on your way to winning a game, you will start to manage it in a slightly different way. I'll take this one from the Arsenal Avenger, who says that my comments on Ben White are nitpicking. Look, I'm not sitting here slagging the guy off and saying, oh, he's out of order, but it's just one thing that didn't really sit well with me, I've got to be honest. Wes Bird says, Harry, are you surprised that Rice played the full 90 minutes, especially with Bayern coming up on Tuesday? Or does that cement how massively important he is now and that Arteta trusts him so much defensively? I think it's more of the latter. You know, he does see him as a really important part of the team. Obviously, he looks at Rice and he looks at Partey. He thinks they're both massively important to the group. Rice more so nowadays than Thomas Partey, but feels like Rice is the one that can handle it, essentially, that can handle this really demanding schedule. And also, you know, Rice, you know, got a lot of time off against Luton. Like, I know he came on, but you know, he was on the bench for most of that game. So, you know, he probably feels like that was his resting period. He's given him that time. And now that means that he could go the full night in a game like this. And I think Mikel Arteta just respects opponents now and thinks, no, I can't take too many risks. Sam says over on X, have we got ourselves a generational manager? I think it's a little bit early to say that because of the fact that he's not achieved any of the big ones yet. But can I say that I feel like we're moving in that direction? Maybe. Because I think his evolution as a manager, and we talked a little bit about it in the preview show, has just been insane. Blanco on the penalty says, definitely a penalty. Credit to Arteta for changing the philosophy of passing 30,000 times for the win to sit back and defend with your life and counter, because it's really working. Love it. What else we got? Gary says, safe travels home. This was a question that he put in after the game yesterday. Will Cedric qualify for a medal if we win the title? Imagine his photo bombing escapades. I don't know if the rules have changed with regards to what you need to do to qualify for a medal. But look, if you're part of the squad, have one. Why not? And Taylor, who I don't think is an Arsenal fan, by the way, just judging by how like passive aggressive this question is. Will you mention this? And then he's sort of quote tweeted a video of the Ben White thing. I've said it already that it wasn't my cup of tea. KS Miles says, thoughts on the Jason Cundy outrage around the penalty. I haven't heard what he had to say So it's difficult for me to comment on that. But if he's saying it's not a penalty, then give your head a wobble. And I've worked with Jason Cundy a couple of times. Jason Cundy is a really good guy. He's a wind-up merchant, though, which is his job. So don't bite is what I'd say to that. Salah Hadeen says, what do you think about the rotation? There is criticism that we could have rotated more in yesterday's game. I think that was a really tough, high-quality game of football, and we just took our chances. And the fact that we didn't rotate is a large contributing factor to why they weren't able to make chances. I think if you change one or two more players, then you run that risk. And you can't run that risk because we're in a situation now where we literally have to win every game at the moment. I look at Liverpool's fixtures and I think we have to win every game. I look at Manchester City. I think they will win every other game. So if you want to stay above them, you have to manage that. I think there was a game to rotate and that was Luton the other night. And we rotated. We made five changes. We got through it unscathed with a victory, 3 points on the board. Now it's all systems go. It really, really is. So, yeah. Arsenal Avenger says, do you think that some of the narratives rivals are trying to find against us are getting embarrassing now? Yeah, but you know what? That means we're doing well. When people are talking about us, when people are, trying to find reasons to discredit us, it means we're on the right track and we're on the right path. So I'm all for it. Happy days. Look, guys, we are going to leave it there. Thank you so, so much for joining me. I really, really do appreciate it. As always, make sure you subscribe here on YouTube. Leave a like on the video if you haven't done so already. And you can subscribe on all major podcast platforms, whichever one you prefer. Be sure to follow me on X at Harry Simeu. Follow the pod at TCOAG pod. Follow me on Insta at Harry_Simeu. You can also follow me on TikTok at Harry Simeu. Thank you once again for your amazing support. We'll be back tomorrow with another pod, and we're going to be looking ahead to that game against Bayern Munich on Tuesday night. What a cracker that promises to be. Should we be confident given their current form, or do we still need to be wary of Harry Kane's side? We'll talk about that on the next episode. Until the next one, take care of yourselves. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.